I'm happy to be here giving a talk on introduction of fuzzing. Everyone welcome. And so let's go. A little bit about me. If it will not switch. Okay. My name is Jochen. I have a master in computer science. I came from a background of backend and web development. I always had like a strong focus on quality software, like writing it, testing it, analyze it, stuff like that. It was always like my personal focus. And now I'm working at a company called Code Intelligence here from Bonn. And there I'm responsible for CLI tools. And during the talk, we will see one that we are working on in our team, and that's open source. So today we're covering the following topics. In general, what is fuzzing? A short history and how you can classify the different types of fuzzers. Then what is, like, I call it modern fuzzing, like the approaches that changed a lot, how you can use fuzzing and how effective and how useful it is, and in which scenarios you can use it and what kinds of bugs and vulnerabilities you can find. And then we will not only do one live demo, what already is a bad idea for a talk, we will do three live demos. So if we have all the time for that. So one question first, or two questions. Who heard about fuzzing before? Oh, a lot. Perfect. And who used it actually? way less. Okay, this is the thing. In general, why using fuzzing at all, or what's all the fuzz about? It actually finds a lot of bugs and vulnerabilities. These are the most current numbers, at least for the stuff from Chrome and OSS fuzz, that are found with fuzzing. And it's quite impressive numbers. And even like some of the most critical vulnerabilities can be found with fuzzing. For example, short after Heartbleed was released, one guy came up with a tutorial how to find Heartbleed, how a Heartbleed should have been found with a fuzzer. If you remember the shell shock stuff, the backdoor into the bash shell, it was a set of vulnerabilities, and most of them were actually discovered with fuzzing. And there was like a project, a research project, where they fuzzed the Adobe Reader 50 days and found 50 CVEs. So yeah, you actually can find vulnerabilities. And for example, the after Log4j, we came up with a showcase how you can find Log4j now in with our fuzzer, our JVM fuzzer. After it, it's already a little bit easier. You have to come up before, so yeah. But still, you can do a lot. So what is the basic idea behind fuzzing? If a lot of you already heard about fuzzing, then it's most probably that you heard about that. Like, you feed your system under test, your application, whatever, with random inputs, and you hope it crashes. So, and then you observe the crashes. Like the predecessor from fuzzing, you can call it random testing. This is like around forever. They made like random holes in punch cards and see how the systems behave. But the term fuzzing was actually come up around 88 with some releases in the 90s from a group from the Wisconsin College, and they are still on. Like, I think 2 years ago they had like another publication, and they actually founded the term fuzzing. And then fast forward a lot, in 2012 Google announces cluster fuzz, which is an scalable infrastructure to do fuzz tests or fuzz runs in a continuous way. This is also important to have in mind. You can like fuzz once, but it's really get very helpful if you do like fuzzing continuously, like if you integrate it into your CI/CD stuff. Then 2013, the American Fuzzy Lab came. It's AFL. It's one of the fuzzers that was, or the fuzzer that was involved in the shell shock findings. And what makes him so special, we will see later. Lipfuzzer is like going same direction. It became at one part at one time 2016 part of the LLVM CLang project. What makes it easy to use and accessible. Then 2016 also Google released or announced OSS Fuzz. It's basically a cluster fuzz instance for a cluster fuzz setup for open source software. If you have somehow important open source software, you can get it into OSS Fuzz and it got fuzzed continuously. And 2 years ago, Microsoft came up with an alternative, like also a self-hosted thing, OneFuzz. So it's really like in the big companies also in use. There's one thing, sometimes related with monkey with fuzzing, it's monkey testing. People like use it as like interchangeable, but it's not actually so good. Like monkey testing is more about random actions that you put on your system, and fuzzing is more focused on the inputs. Just if you have heard monkey testing and sees random inputs, it should be the same. Now there are differences. Now we look a little bit on the classification of fuzzing. Or fuzzers, like the tools that actually do the fuzzing. You can classify them by the target, like if you fuzz an application or if you fuzz a protocol or a file format. Then you can also classify it about the by the knowledge of the program structure. It's a little bit like unit tests or tests in general. Do you have knowledge about the internals or do you know nothing or just a little bit? So white box or black box testing. And then this is the more important category is like how the input is generated. Like I said, fuzzing is a lot about generating inputs and how you generate them. And there's like the generation-based fuzzing. This means you generating input that is based on a certain structure or grammar or something. For example, if your fuzzer generates valid C code, like CSmith is a tool that does that. If you write a C compiler, for what reason you do that? But if you do and you want to verify that it can run or compile all the various things, you can do that with generation-based fuzzing. And then there's mutation-based fuzzing, where you mutate existing inputs, like flipping bits, adding stuff, removing stuff. And things like that. And then also, how much do you know about the input that the system under test is expecting? Do you know nothing? Like, then it's basically dumb fuzzing. You're hitting against the system with a lot of random inputs and hope for the best. Or you have some information about it. Like, you know that, like for example, expecting a JSON in a certain format. Then it's, of course, smart fuzzing. And the actually breakthrough, or what we collected modern fuzzing, or what I would call modern fuzzing, is coverage guided mutation based fuzzing. That means that you are generating new inputs from existing ones. Like I said, you mutate them, you adjust them, and also with like genetic or evolutionary algorithms, like applying some inputs to the application, see how they perform, and then select like one of them that performs best. Performance, like what is good performance, we will see later, and stuff like that. And this is the thing, you see how the inputs behave in your application and what you can watch from the application. This is why there's coverage, for example, in the headline. You can feed random inputs, mutated inputs into your application and see how the coverage that it's covered by these inputs changed. And if you remember like the graphic in the first, it's getting like an extra point with behavior information. So, and to visualize it a little bit more, this is what is it basically in a nice graphic, what is the change from black box fuzzing without having internal knowledge against knowledge about, if you have knowledge about the internal structures. So. In the left case, you see like it's a black box, you feed inputs, and there is, of course, if you do it a lot and really for long, long times, there's a sense that you hit all the bugs and vulnerabilities, but it's getting super low. If you have like a complex application, if you have to like complex inputs and stuff like that, it's very, very not probable that you will get all the bugs. It's also not like for sure in if you have like insights in the application, like with example code coverage, but it's way easier to for the fuzzer to like explore your application and find the ways through it, the paths. Yeah. Genau. Question? Yeah?
Code coverage means that you hit all the paths in the code? Or?
Okay, I repeat the question further. I think the question was that coverage, if coverage means that you hit all the paths. Exactly, it is. Like I will show it in a detail a little bit later, but basically you feed input into the application and look how much paths were covered. And then you mutate the input and see if there's more paths covered. And this continues for, if you are like serious about it, for a long time. And yeah, and you have to like prepare the application to do these coverage reports. And it's, you can imagine it basically like in unit tests. If you run your unit tests with a coverage instrumentation, you also get the same stuff. But compared to unit tests, a fuzzer actually uses it. Like in a unit test, the coverage is just for you to see what did you cover. And a fuzzer, a modern fuzzer, uses it. So one difference also where you can like separate different kind of fuzzers are in-process fuzzing and out-of-process fuzzing. Like the name already said, like in-process fuzzing runs in the same process or the same VM, in the case of Java, for example, as the application. It's usually fast, and of course it's running the same scope. It's easy to get this information about coverage. Out-of-process fuzzing is a little bit different. You have like the fuzzer runs alongside, like in a different process, even on a different system, for example. If you imagine the scenario that you are fuzzing multiple services like microservices or distributed systems, it can even run on a complete different machine. And yeah, this is, like I mentioned, it's useful for distributed systems, but you need to have like a talkback channel. Like if you have a microservice architecture and you're hitting like the entry point with random inputs, and you want to see how that affects a service like in level 3 or whatever, how big your microservice architecture is, then you need like, first you need instrumentation on the hidden service, and you need a talkback channel where like the coverage information from the hidden service can come back to the fuzzer actually. And as I already said with the example from microservices, it's very useful if you have protocol-based services like a web API with REST or with GraphQL, then of course you can do it. But what we today look at is in-process fuzzing. It means that all the examples we see later are in-process fuzzers. A lot of the stuff we will cover with the in-process fuzzing is also applicable to out-of-process fuzzing. So just to have that in mind. So now a more detailed look on the graphic we saw before. This is what it's still a little bit simplified, and it can depend on the fuzzer, but this is usually the components of a fuzzing system. We have the fuzzer who generates and mutates the inputs. The orange box is the fuzz target or the fuzz test. It's like where the fuzzer feeds the input into, and it's get called like a lot of times, like in a good setup, 10,000 times a second or even more, and for a long time. Then you can see the system under test. In this, the fuzz target is actually living. It's instrumented. It means like it collects coverage information, like we mentioned before, but it can also implement hooks. We will see an example later what a hook can be. And it is instrumented with sanitizers. Just you heard it. We will also take a look at that later. It can like hooked into compares, like string compares, operators, and all this information that get collected, that and with the help of the source code, in the best cases, gets back to the fuzzer, like this going back. Then the fuzzer is like managing a generated corpus. And this is the corpus where he puts all the interesting inputs in. And for example, he has an input, and the input explored a new branch in your code. Like he make it through a if statement, for example, and have like discovered new features or new paths for the fuzzer. He will store it in the generated corpus. And if you have like continuous fuzzing runs, this generated corpus can also be used for the start. This is like the little S circle. If you start the fuzzer, it also reads the generated corpus, so you don't have to start from the beginning. And if you found some crash, you will have like a crashing input. Usually the crashing input don't get into the generated corpus, because then you have like a crashing test every time you run it. What you can do is give the fuzzer some useful information. For example, if you have magic values, or if you have a certain file format or structure, like protocol I mentioned, that you want to give the fuzzer hints, you can do it in the seed corpus. It's like only used in the beginning, like when the fuzzer started, and it started the mutating of the inputs based on stuff from the seed corpus. So if you have no seed corpus, it will basically start with empty bytes, also like null, nothing, and start going from there. And you can imagine it will take a while. If you have a specific JSON structure, for example, it will take a while until the fuzzer can actually come up with it, like mutating as long as he got to a JSON. That can take a while, so it might be useful if you give like a hint to your fuzzer and put an input in the seed corpus. So, I mentioned sanitizers. The thing is, we are looking for crashes. You want your application to crash. If you fuzz it and it keeps running and you don't notice like it's not crashing, it's running through, you have no possibility to see what happened. And so usually this is like where we come in the C++ area, you instrument your application under test, your system under test, with a sanitizer. And these sanitizer, you can also use them without a fuzzer. Like in general, they're a very useful thing. They will slow down your application, because I will show later, but they help actually triggering the bug or the vulnerability. So if the fuzzer finds a crash or comes to a line of code that causes the crash, then the sanitizer or the hook will actually help finding it. I give an example for the ASIN, for the address sanitizer. What it does is overrides the malloc and the free functions of C, for example. And every time you allocate a memory, it will add like a poisoned area, the red area, like in front and back, left, right, top, bottom, how you would call it. It will allocate like some poisoned area. So if you have like overflows leaving your initial assigned memory, then the address sanitizer can detect it, and then he will crash us. When in normal cases, your application can continue running. And same for if you free the memory again, it's quarantined, and then if you access it again after you freed it, it's like a free after use or use after free, he will detect it also. But for example, it comes with a slowdown. The address sanitizer, I think it's from Google, and they spend a lot of time optimizing it, but it's still like half the speed of without it if you instrument your application with it. So it's, something you should use. Another name is, depending on the context, sanitizer is usually connected to the C++ area. Sometimes you see the names like bug detectors. We will come to it later when I show you the JVM fuzzer we have, that it's not about like address or memory violation. It's most of the stuff data did. It's more about like finding bugs or finding behavior that it's not so good. So the question is what kind of bugs you can actually find. On the left we have the stuff that is covered by the sanitizer, that you can, like, this is the things you can find with a fuzzer in C++ on the left side. It's the typical overflows, global heap stack buffer overflows, use after return of free, like memory leaks also. The memory sanitizer, MSAN, it checks if you read uninitialized memory. TSAN is the threat sanitizer, looks for data races or deadlocks. And UBSAN, like undefined behavior, looks if there's something happened that it's not defined how it should actually act in the system you are running. So null pointers, floating point conversions, overflows. And the right side is more like stuff you can find with any fuzzer. It's if there's like inputs that triggers a lot of memory usage. You can imagine like having a path in your application that brings a loop to run for super long, or a service get unresponsive and stuff like that. Infinite loops, infinite recursion, and stuff like that, that can be, of course, observed. Like you can say, your father, here are times out, I expect my application to answer in this amount of time. If not, we have like a slow response or a timeout. We can also say, I expect it to be, in general, responding fast, stuff like that. You can also look for logical bugs. If you have to re-implement a parser or a protocol or something like this, and you re-implement it in another language or like in the same language but new, then you can run the same input on the two implementations and see if they behave differently. That can also be some use case. And you can do stuff with, for example, if you have a compressor or encryption, stuff like that. You can do it like the round trips. Will it be correct if I feed this input into my TAR implementation and pack it and unpack it, or my SIP implementation, will it have the same result? Because you can imagine that there are inputs that discovering bugs in the compression algorithm, and then the decompressed input will be different. And then, of course, it can just plain crashes. Like if your application crashes without sanitizer or bug detectors, it will, of course, detect it, like in the C case with null dereferences or Java uncaught exceptions in JavaScript also, stuff like that. So, and from what we heard now, we can also take a look at what is are useful, like good targets for fuzzing. And basically, it's anything that needs, that consumes untrusted or complicated inputs. So like everything with user interaction can be a good case, but of course the stuff like parsers, compilers, decoders, protocols, cryptography, some regex matcher, browsers, browsers we saw in the beginning, the example with how much bugs were found in Chromium with fuzzing. So these are like the classical cases where you can do it. But of course, if you have a web application that takes user input and it's has like at least is a little bit complexity in it, then it can also make sense to run it with a fuzzer. Yes, there are limitations. For example, non-crashing bugs are really hard to find. If you apply an input and your application keeps running and you apply a next input, it might getting like creating state or whatever, and you don't really see it, and no one wants to go through log files generated in a fuzzing run, stuff like that. And everything without source code is way harder. Like getting coverage information without having the source code can be super painful if you don't know the input formats. You have to guess them. For example, it's expecting JSON, but you have no clue what the JSON is structured. Or even worse, it's an input format that you don't know. And that makes everything way complicated. But it's still possible. There's a talk from Brendan Falk, who covers that, how we get there. It's it's crazy stuff. It's like with snapshot in special emulators and stuff like that, instrumenting the assembler code and stuff like that. It's really cool, but if you have sources, everything is way easier. Okay. Now it's demo time. Any questions until here? Because we still can do them later, but yeah, let's do some demos. First thing I show is the Jazzer. It's our fuzzer for the JVM. It's open source since last year, beginning of last year. It's coverage guided. It's based on LibFuzzer and Jacoco. Jacoco is like the coverage instrumentation you usually use in Java. It's run in the JVM, so I'm always say Java, but it also works for Kotlin and Scala, every JVM compatible language. It is very fast because it's in process. 1 million is like if it's like an empty fast target on a reasonable powered machine, but it's not like it's not slow or something like that. And this is something as a company we are proud of. We power the Jazzer is used in Google's OSS fuzz for running the JVM fuzzing. So if you have an open source Java project and you let it fuzz in OSS fuzz, most probably it will be our fuzzer. Yeah, it has an auto fuzz mode. I will also show for very simple cases it uses all the reflection and fancy features Java offers to get like automatically create a fuzz target. So it reads the expected input parameters and will get there. And we have a hooking framework for own sanitizer bug detectors. For example, I think the log4j stuff is a special bug detector, or SQL injections or things like that, they are special bug detectors. So, yeah, this is also a good point. What is important to mention, we looked at the sanitizers from the C, C++ stuff. And usually you say, Java is like a memory safe language. What should happen? Like, I don't have like overflows usually. There should nothing be like memory corruptions. The JVM handles it. It's memory safe. So why I'm fuzzing it? And there are things like you can fuzz for like actual bugs, like if you have exceptions that are not catched. And you can also like, okay, here, this is a set of exceptions that are okay to thrown. Everything beside that should not get thrown by my application or my library. You can check for assertions and the thing I mentioned, like the inconsistent implementations. If you have to implement something in Java, check if it's behaved correctly. Like these are more functional stuff. And of course, there are security issues in Java too. You can have infinite loops. It's very interesting if you go for like denial of service attacks or something like that. If you have an input that is how big or whatever, it can be small, can be big. But if you have an input that will put your application into an infinite loop, then it's perfect for a denial of service attack. Then you only have to throw as many inputs as it has cores or processes or servers, whatever, and they will get slowed down and will be blocked. Out of memory is still a thing. If you have like limited resources to your application and there's an input that still managed to create more and more and more memory usage, then can also trigger an error and an issue also in a JVM. It's basically the same as an infinite loop, perfect for denial of service attacks. Yeah?
How do you detect infinite loops and path errors from a
fuzzer? Please again?
How do you detect infinite loops in a fuzzer and path errors?
This is with timeouts, like I mentioned before. The question was how do you detect infinite loops within a fuzzer?
If you do it, then you wait to, if it doesn't return soon.
Yeah, yeah.
You cannot wait if you do 1 million executions per second.
Yeah, this is a problem. You say usually I want a fast response. I have a timeout that is, for example, 1 second or something. And then it's an indicator for an infinite loop. Then the fuzzer will cut the process. or you can even have like slow responses. You can like have it must an infinite loop is like no response, of course.
Yeah, if you wait a second, then you have one execution per second, not 1 minute.
Yeah, you should. This too. Like the you have to take a look how fast is your fuzzer running, and if you like if it slows down or stops at some point, then it's a good indicator also. Like. Then the if you have a bug detector or something, then it can throw a crash after, like a timeout error or something like that. But if you run it and you see like your execution time is super low, then it's really like a problem. Then yeah, there are other reasons we will come also later what you should avoid when writing a fuzz target that also slows it down. Like one execution per second is it might be okay if you're fuzzing a web service with God knows how much stuff behind it. And that and nothing is mocked and it writes into databases and doing stuff. But usually if you have in-process fuzzers, that is something you should avoid. Okay, like this, but it can also detect remote code execution with the right bug detectors, like the nowadays log4j stuff was an example. You can still have like past URLs leaving like the passes you defined, something like that can be detected, and also injections like we all know from SQL or other script languages. Okay, now we take a look. I hope everything is working. Here we are. I will move a little bit. One moment, please. So the first example we will take a look at is everything is readable or bigger? I can do it a little better. This is Jazzer now, and this is like the like an example we provide, and it's exactly what like it's a typical scenario. We have like an image parser, and it takes the input and see what happened. This, what we are currently looking at, is the fuzz target we saw in the picture before. So a fuzz target has to have a certain name to be detected, and then it just takes bytes. Like, you have to convert them. If your function you want to test is taking strings, you have to convert them, and there are tools to make it easy, and in Java it's even easier. You can having a data provider that will convert it for you. But what we see here is we have this image parser. It has a bug or an uncaught exception. We make sure that it's like an old version and it's not getting fixed. Then you feed in the input, like the byte input you get from the fuzzer, basically as an image into the image parser. We ignore a few exceptions, like IO exceptions and image read exceptions. These are exceptions we would expect. So then we just started. We're using Bazel, but as a build system for the repository. I'm doing it directly in the open source repository. But you can download the releases, and then you have binaries or jars to work with. You don't have to use Bazel or something like this. But to run the examples, it's pretty useful because it makes sure that everything is like the dependency we are fuzzing is in the right version and everything. So we can start now. Ah, this is Bazel. I already built it, so it should be fast. Now everything is instrumented. Like you see, the hooks were set and the libraries were passed, set up. And now it's already crashed. It looks a little bit confusing. It's a lot of output while stack traces. But what you can see here, it was super quick. This is all the fuzzer output. You can see, for example, this is a typical libfuzzer output. You can see how many executions were done. I think there were actually here are more numbers. like we are like 160,000 per second. You can see how big the corpora is. The corpus is the generated corpus. It has 97 entries. How many features or coverage were detected, and this will increase. And you can see what the fuzzer actually did, like erased bytes, shuffled bytes, insert a new byte, and stuff like that. And then he found an Java exception, and it's a negative array size exception. That can be a bug, that can be a security issue, we don't know at this point, but it's an exception we didn't expect. Then you see the crashing input it's generated. It's user encoded, but here, like, it's not really readable, but this is the thing, you couldn't open a JPEG and read it. So this is the input that crashed it. It gets saved at one position, and if you work further with it, like debugging your application, you can do it with this input. It's also possible to create a reproducer, a replayer. It's like a single piece that contains only the code needed to run it and the crashing input, and it's easily to debug then. This is basically it for this. Then we also have an example with an hook. Mm-hmm. So what's here missing is like the function we're testing. All the code we have is in the fuzz target. This is like for example cases, like this is what we're looking for, and this is the error we trigger. And the fuzzer should now come up with some magic swing, and this is, you see there's a random part in it. And it's nearly impossible for the fuzzer to guess that random part, because it's every time it runs, it's generated new. And maybe it's something you have somewhere in your application, like there's some seeding or some stuff that is random or not deterministic. And you have to make sure that it's accessible for your fuzzer. For like, there can be the lucky coincidence that the fuzzer get this input plus the generating the input plus the random input at that moment in time, but it's basically impossible. And the thing you can do now is help the fuzzer with a hook. And you see, this is what we does for the example. We implement a hook that wraps the secure random function we were using in our test code and make sure that it always return 4. If you know the XKCD cartoon, it's like it was a fair dice roll. So it always return 4. The fuzzer is now deterministic, or the application behaves now deterministic, and can be fuzzed easily. And we can do it. What is it? It's the example fuzzer. Some setup again, and then immediately, like super fast, it came up with the input, and of course, at the end, there was a 4 here. And there was magic string and stuff. This is actually the string, like magic string 4, and this was what we are looking for in our code, in the test code. You see, it's like really example that goes super super fast. Usually, you have to wait a little bit longer. Maybe not if it's the first time you fuzz your application, and there are some obviously mistakes. But then usually you have to wait a little bit. This is why I mentioned it's best done in a continuous integration scenario. And then the last thing I want to show for Jazzer is the autofuzz feature. Here we have it prepared. We also provide, by the way, Docker containers for the Jazzer. So you can easily use it. And also, there's a container for the autofuzz stuff. And the thing here, what's happened, we say we want to autofuzz. This is the Docker container is a pretty easy way to set up, and it only needs like the dependencies. I don't know if you know JSOUP, but it's like an HTML parser, a popular one for Java, and it has like this bug in the in this version. So we define the exactly version to find the thing. Then we say the identifier of the function and with the argument. So if you have like an overwritten function or overloaded function, can be handled. So you identify the function you want to pass, and now the autofuzz generates a fuzz target for you and starts feeding the input into this Java function. Then we have this keep going too. That means we usually the autofuzz or JDazzer can continue if you find exceptions. And we say, okay, it is enough if you find two exceptions, and then we will stop. And this is what the what it does. So it's downloading JSOUP in the version, instrumenting everything, and start running. And this takes a little bit longer, but I don't know if it's readable, but we allow about 24,000 executions per second. And I hope he will find something. It's still random, like you never know, but it should trigger at least one, and then a second one soonish. And you see, this can also slow down a little bit. Now we are like more of like 20,000 executions. If the fuzzer discover more and more of your application and getting deeper into the application, it's actually your application needs more time to process, and then it can get slower. But you saw there's it's found there's an index out of bounds exception, and with the crashing input. Yep. So I don't know. It looks like in a header, in a HTTP header or something. Yeah, but it's saved. The caching input is saved, and there's also written that a reproducer is saved as a Java class, and you can start debugging with that. So that was it from Jazzer. Let me take a look at the time. Ah, we are fine. Another tool we have, also open source, is CIFuzz. We started a few months ago. It's still under very active development, and the goal is to make fuzz tests as easy as writing unit tests. If you're using like C, C++, or project with CMake, you can already use it, but we will still like adding new features. It's open source. This is why we are here, and the idea is to bring you like to a convenient CLI tool that do all the setup stuff and the integration in your existing build system and things like that, and that is also like working with different languages, so you don't have to care if you're currently working with a JavaScript application and then you have to C++ project working on, or something that is might be closer to each other, like a Go backend and the JavaScript frontend and stuff like that. Currently we have the C++ CMake support. We have integrations in CLine and VS Code. More is coming. Of course, if we add like JavaScript, there will be more stuff for WebStorm and stuff, things like that. We have coverage reporting. I will show you also that you can actually see and what your fuzz test actually covered. Then we have sandboxing for Linux only by now with Minijail. You can imagine if you're running it on your own machine, it can be dangerous if the fuzzer triggers some file deletion and does it on slash or root or whatever. You want to avoid that, and so we have sandboxing in that. We have an easy way to regression testing that is like basically the replayer reproducer idea I said before. If you have a finding, you don't want to run a fuzzer again. You want to run the finding, like the crashing input, with the code and debug it. Like go through the code and see where's the thing, and we have an easy way to offer that. And the findings in general have, like you saw, it's like super wide binary byte output, and we give them nice names and you can handle them easily. And Then we will have Java and Jazz, like Jazz support, of course. Then the next thing I will also show later is the, if we have time, is our new JavaScript fuzzer that will be going to be open source next week. This will also be included in the CF fuzz tool. We have like these out of box debugging. We want to have like that you easily can start a debugger on your finding, and then the SAS connection stuff. I have to mention it. The thing is, this all is open source and it will stay open source, and we are super happy if someone uses it and want to participate. We engage everyone to do that. But we also have a part, the company has a part where we offer something that is has to be paid for it, and this is our SaaS solution. If you're working in a big team having and want to set up continuous integration on your project, our SaaS solution can offer it. It has like sharing findings easily between your team members, triaging the findings, saying this is critical, this is non-critical, stuff like that, and also offering workers and runners where you can actually run the fuzz test if you don't want your infrastructure to be handling that. So let's take a look at CI fuzz. Let me think. For this case, we have like a rather simple project. Oh, never update your Vim before anything. This is our fuzz target. Oh no, sorry. Not this way. We don't have a fuzz target for now. I really want to guide you through the steps to find this heap overflow. This is our code. We wrote it. Why? I don't know. But you see it has unintended multiple branches that can only be reached when certain conditions are fulfilled. For a human, this is clear. But for automatic testing, it's like the challenge to find it. So we have three input parameters, A, B, and C. A has to be bigger than 20,000. B has to be bigger than 200,000 or 2 million. 2 million. And the difference between them should be smaller than 100,000, so weird conditions. Then C has to be a string containing fuzzing, and then you trigger the heap buffer overflow. And this is our application. It's a C application. We have a CMake setup that is basically only adding this application, like the code we had, to a main application and let it run, so nothing more. And to get, now we start really from the beginning. And first you have to install. Come on, live demos. We offer like an install script as everyone does nowadays, but you can also install it from source. You can download the release packages, but this script will detect your system because we are supporting macOS and Windows and M1 Macs even. And it will find the right version and install it. Perfect. So, I already did the thing that it mentioned there to add it to my path. So we have the current version. And let me scroll down here. The next thing is to do is you have to initialize the project. Oops. There's an init command, and then it guides you to the process. It creates a configuration you can use for if you have special stuff to do. And it says that you can have to adjust your CMake list. If you're a CMake developer, this is pretty normal for you. And we also offer presets for CMake to make it easier for you. You should do that. I skip it. I will do it later in one task. But then the next thing is to do is create a fuzz target. And we offer like a shortcut to that. So we say, yeah, it's a C++ project. And then it says, OK, we generated these my fuzz test one CPP as a stub for you. And you have to adjust your CMake file again. And we can now take a look at it. So this is the one that was generated. It contains the basic stub. If you have to do some pre-setup, you can do it here. And there's also more links, more tutorials. But we ignore this. We will first do the things that we were told to do, like in our CMake stuff, activating our fuzz test. And I prepared one. And we can take a look at it. And yeah, ignore the warnings. It's because my Vim is crazy today. And this is the tool I mentioned. Like the fuzz data provider helps you to get out of the byte array. Like we get an array with a size into our fuzz target. And it helps you to get two integers and one string. And then feed it into the function we saw before. And that's basically it. So now we can start the fuzz test here with the name, just like this. And it will do the CMake stuff, and it already found finding. This was super fast. And you see the string also contains here the fuzzing stuff, and the binary stuff will be the magic values we need. Then it creates a finding, like admiring McClintock. And you can like watch it again, see what the stack trace was. By the way, here's also stack trace and all the fuzzer output and things like that. Here, you see the finding. It's a heap buffer overflow. This will also get way nicer later. We are working on that. And here you see that was found by the address sanitizer. And if you remember, if you can see it, it's like these poisoned areas of memory, and it gives you information what happened. And if you really have a very specific debug need, it can help you. And then it says, like here, we have the finding. You can find it here, and ready to go. The next thing you can do is getting a coverage report.
What did you enable the
The address sanitizer. This is something our CMake integration does. The question was how we enabled the address sanitizer.
How does it decide what sanitizer to enable? Because like all five of them?
We have like, we always do it with per default with the address sanitizer and the undefined behavior sanitizer. And there are parameters where you can adjust it, I think.
Okay.
Here maybe, or in the configuration. Yeah, it can be here, I think, engine arcs or fuzz test arguments. I'm not sure, but there should be a possibility. By now, we decided on the base of it happens in our CMake integration. So coverage was the stuff you wanted to see. So it's building again. It's open an HTML report, seeing how much, which lines were covered, and which how many hits there were. And we basically found it in 28 fuzzing runs, or like inputs. It's pretty fast, fast found. And you see like the first 28 runs were stopped at the first if statement. Then after like the difference, 9, 11, after 11 runs, it made it true. Then it needs another while to get through this, and so on and so on. And the last run that actually triggered the heap overflow was here, and we covered it once. And we also have, if you like it, like an output here on the console. You can export it to LCAF and use it for the tool you like, and having nice formatting in HTML, whatever. It's there. And yeah. We're running out of time. So I skipped the part where I would show you how the replayer works, but it's documented on our GitHub repo. it's easy to like run the same thing without fuzzing and applying the caching input to the fuzz test, basically. I think it's mentioned also here, like how to do it. So the last thing I want to show is our JavaScript fuzzer. And I will skip a few examples.
I have another question about your fuzzer. So does it actually loop and tries to understand the code, or just tries and see what branches it can trigger the course? If you just randomly try input and try to get down through the branch, you cannot get through the word fuzzing in 10 tries. There's no way you can get the word fuzzing in 10 tries. It has like 8 letters. So does it analyze the code to see what?
Depends. Of course, it can guess long inputs because it's generated more and more bytes.
It get through the word fuzzing in 10 tries. It get through the A-B condition in like 10 tries. You cannot do it that fast unless you actually try to understand the code.
There are comparisons. This is the other thing. The one thing is coverage, and the other thing is hooking into string comparisons or operators and see like if there is some comparison against the static parameter. And you can teach the fuzzer or like with a hook, you can teach him if here's a string compare, take the value it's getting compared to. If it's not a variable, it's a constant, try this one. And this is how it does the magic. Okay, I will skip a few examples, but just short. It's a in-process coverage-guided fuzzer for JavaScript. We will release it open source next week. And I show you the maze. So basically, this is also like all-included fuzz target, no external libraries. But you can do the same, like you can include an image parser, run the input there. But the idea is that the fuzzer find a way through these maze by trying different inputs. And then we have like control commands, left, back, right, top, and stuff like this, up, down, and giving like some state informations. So making sure that the fuzzer knows what is a wall and everything. And for everyone who knows JavaScript and NPM stuff, it will be one package. Currently, it's built from the source because it's not released. But later, you can do it as NPM install, and then you get the fuzzer, and everything should run fine. So we will slow that down a little bit to actually see what's happening. So this is, I run the maze example, pipe all the ugly libfuzzer output you saw against def null, and I will slow down my CPU for that. And then you see how the fuzzer gets through the maze. Yeah, and then he found the exception that at the end waits. And that is this. The funny thing, it's random. It's if we run it again, like for now, he didn't discover the area in the top, in the middle top. If we run it again, it might be that he found it. Yeah, now he had it and getting out of it. Okay. So yeah, this is like I said, next week. Sam Heinz. If you start fuzzing, try to optimize for coverage. Like give helpful hints to your fuzzer. Make sure that the fuzz target is fast, that it's deterministic, that it's not wasting resources doing a lot of I/O, reading files, writing files during your fuzz test is not a good idea. So disable logging to a file or something like that. Reduce the log level just for the fuzz test, of course. It's both applicable for your application you test and the fuzz test. Use the fuzz data provider if you have to convert. It's really, I hate C++ casting into types, and this thing does it for me. Then there are a few links. including the company blog. For example, we have articles about how you can write your custom hooks for the Java fuzzer, the Jazzer. Of course, we are hiring. If you're interested in like fuzzing and security, we have different roles, a few more on the website. But I thought this is the stuff that might be matching here at most. And that was it. Thank you for your patience and any questions. Okay, not. We go up from there.
You mentioned CSUS as a classic fuzzing tool for testing C compilers. Is that still the state of the art, or is it something that you would recommend these days?
I'm not sure. The question was if CSUS is a tool for is a fuzzer, but
it's a fuzzer. I think it's still maintained.
I'm not sure if it's actually a fuzzer. It's only I never tried it really, but from what I know, it's a tool for generating just C programs, or
for use in fuzzing testing.
Yeah, then you use it in a fuzzer. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's still state of the art. Usually, there are not many use cases anymore for writing C compilers, but yeah, can be still a good thing. If it's, I don't know if CSMIS still follows new standards, especially if you do C++ stuff. It has to be found out. If you come later to me and we get in contact, I can ask colleagues that are more into the C area, if you want. Yes, next one, please.
So you have the CMake config for integrating into existing C++ projects. I briefly tried it on my project. It didn't work. The thing with my project is that it has a lot of specific compiler flags. And like the utility there probably assumes a lot of the compiler flags. So is there a way, or will there in the future be a way to like change the CIFAS flags that are used in the CMake configuration?
I would expect that it's already happening. I'm not sure why not. It depends a little bit, I think, how you actually give the compiler flags and how special they are and what compiler you use. The thing is,
it's GCC.
Okay, then that's a problem. The thing is, we have to use, for the CMake and C stuff, we have to use CLang, because CLang actually supports libfuzzer as a compiler argument and links it in, makes everything nice for you, and the sanitizers. So every time we build the targets with CMake, we replace GCC with CLang in this case.
That's another problem because it's a patch compiler.
Yeah, okay.
I'll look into it.
Yeah, same. You can reach out to me, and then we have also colleagues super deep into the CMake stuff, and we can help you. There was another one.
Will the JavaScript be typed for TypeScript?
There was one example I didn't show, but you can. So the question was if Jazzer.js will support TypeScript. I know that it works with a TypeScript project. You just have compile it to JavaScript, and then you can fuzz it. I'm not sure about the TypeScript, the type usage, like if it has these nice stuff with parameter types that you can like say my fuzz target needs a string and a buffer. I think so. I have to take a look.
Yeah. Right. So you mentioned that fuzzing should be created in the CI speed, right? Is there like any best practice, like when to stop fuzzing? Like, because I can imagine that depending on your input, how it looks like, and like how if it has a big range of values that can be introduced by the input, it can take really long maybe to find something, or maybe it does not find anything after a specific amount of time. Like you say, okay, after 5 minutes to stop and it's green and you just deliver. Or
yeah, the question is if there's recommendations on how long you should run the fuzz test in your CI/CD. If there's like advantages of letting it run longer or shorter. Our recommendation is keep fuzzing, but for practical reasons, you should stop at a certain time. So if you have, for example, you have a pull request, and in the pull request you have your checks running, then you don't want to fuzz for 3 hours until the pull request gets green-lighted. So maybe you do it like 5 minutes. If you provide a corpus already, like from the previous fuzzing ones, 5 minutes can be enough to like discover a new path that you added with the pull request. But it also can make sense doing it long, like for nightly builds, letting it run 3 hours. The thing is, if you provide the generated corpora all the time, it can continue at some point. And the other thing is like really keep going. There are some bugs in the history that were found after months of fuzzing. Like sometimes it's still random, and sometimes it takes a while to get this specific thing triggered and crash or something. So CI/CD shorted, so it's still a good workflow for you. So you get your pull request merge and being fast deploying features. Make sure that you have longer fuzzing runs. And yeah, keep going.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we are way over time. So thank you.